Hello, everyone, and welcome to another one. Actually, our final Torino Adriatico recap race analysis here of 2024. And yeah, as always, I'm joined by Patrick Blake of Audi Cycling. Sorry we missed the one yesterday, but a bit of hectic life happened for both of us. But yeah, Patrick, what happened on the final stage of Torino Adriatico?
Well, it looked like it's going to be set to be a sprint to round out the week. But arguably one of the more interesting topics is that how many people didn't finish today? There were a lot of people who didn't start or didn't finish today's stage. And, you know, quite a lot of big names as well. There's talk of illness going around the peloton. And, you know, that's it was a little bit concerning considering that we have seen this sort of stuff around these races. And it does, you know. It was only the Giro last year where people were dropping out like flies. I mean, Remco left the Giro last year because of illness. But that's not really the point of today. The point of today is that there was a breakaway, including Healy, DeMarchi, Tiberi, Steinhauser, Luke Rowe, and Damiano Caruso. It looked like a pretty strong move. It went in the first part of the stage where it was a little bit hillier. However, these guys were never really allowed that much leeway. Considering it was such a strong break, it wouldn't have surprised me if it went to the finish. So it was quite quickly shut down by the likes of Lidl Trek, Alpecin de Koenig. I think Israel were working as well on the front. Eventually, they got through the intermediate sprint, but that was about as far as they got. Then they got brought back with a good 30-ish kilometres still to go. Unfortunately, there was a crash for Richard Carapaz, which was a shame to see. Obviously, he hasn't had a very good week of racing here at Torino, starting off with that TT where it was just a really bad time trial with bad weather. So really sad to see that Carapaz left the race. Hopefully, he gets well soon. But going into the sprint, obviously, with a lot of sprinters leaving the race, like Merlier and Binny and Axel Zingler, neither of these guys finished today's stage. It was really up to guys like Alpecin and UnoX. UnoX with Abrahamsen, I've got to say, was doing an absolutely fantastic job. He was pulling some real big turns on the front. And UnoX, really, with a technical finale, were leading it through a lot of these corners. And that really helped them with their positioning. So much so that going into the final kilometre, we only had Søren Varenschold ahead of Alexander Kristoff. And I've got to say, UnoX pulled such a fantastic move in the finale here. I don't know why more sprint teams don't do it. Kristoff let the wheel go through a roundabout, quite a narrow one as well. Varenschold gets a gap of about 900 meters to go. Kristoff just looks around and says, you guys need to chase that down because that's my teammate. Lidl Trek decide to go to the front with Simone Consonni, who does a massive lead out. I thought that Varenschold was going to hang on for the victory, but unfortunately, that's not what happened. Because we saw Jonathan Milan launch an incredible sprint, as he has done so many times this week. Philipsen's alongside him. There's also Davide Cimolain there, Anielowski. However, despite a little bump between Philipsen and Jonathan Milan, it is Milan who takes the victory off the final stage of Torino Adriatico, ahead of Alexander Kristoff, due to the very fantastic work of Varenschold, Davide Cimolain third, then Philipsen, Anielowski, Amaury Capio, Andrea van Dam, Giovanni Lonardi, Clément Ventolini, and Enrico Zanacello. It's not really like the strongest top 10, considering the sprinting quality that was coming into this race, and that's really a testament to how many people sadly left the race because of illness or crashes this week. Scott, what do you reckon? It's Milan's second victory of the week. He takes the Ciclamino jersey. He was in the lead of the race as well, due to bonus seconds. It's been a great week for Milan and Lidl Trek.
Yeah, a bit more of a difference than what they've had at Paris-Nice. So Jonathan Milan really saving the week of double races here. I think he's just an incredible rider. We saw it last year. It looks like he's getting more confidence with every race, and having a team that really is dedicated to him as well. Just, he's in a fantastic engine. We spoke about it as well, that engine he has from the track. And he's just, I would say, almost very akin to Kittel back in the day, and similar age as well, that where he's really starting to, yeah, I think he's the next generation of sprinters. Obviously, Jesper Philipsen is there as well, and a Dele Alli of Koy, Binyam Girmay as well. But yeah, I think Jonathan Milan is a serious player in this game. The way, like you mentioned, he just brushed off Jasper Philipsen and just continued the momentum. Serious, serious stuff here. And I think Lidl Trek are going to be a team to watch for the sprints. It's a shame he's not going to the Tour. Where is he?
I was I was literally just going to say that, whether he should go to the tour. But do you have Pedersen going, though? Like, obviously, he does take quite a lot of priority in the team, alongside Gegen Hart, who will be trying to do as well as he can in GC. So, yeah, I think it would be cool to see him at the tour, especially if he's got this sort of form. I mean, he was beating Philipsen, so there's no reason why he couldn't do it again, given that Philipsen is pretty much the fastest sprinter in the world, very consistent. Well, Milan would have a very good shot, but I can understand him going with Mats Pedersen, considering that, you know, he's really good. Like, he showed it in Paris-Nice this week, just how versatile he can be. And he's also quite good at climbing. And I do think that Pedersen has got a really good shot of perhaps doing, you know, a good job for even getting the green jersey for Lidl Trek. So I can't blame her for not taking Milan. But we will see him at the Giro d'Italia, where, unfortunately, there's a lot of sprinting talent going there, rather funnily enough, not too much going to the Tour. So it's almost a bit of a shame that he's on a team which has got quite a lot of sprinting talent going. But that's by the by. Milan did a fantastic performance this week, and that certainly can't be taken away from him. He's definitely a big player on the sprinting scene.
I mean, in terms of, you mentioned it, the move done by Uno X, they were very aggressive in this race. They were very present as well. And I mean, if you have a guy like Søren Barentschold, maybe you should do something like this just to throw the cat amongst the pigeons. And Christophe isn't the fastest guy. Okay, we know he has this incredible palmarès, but I think even he would say that he's not the fastest right now. So doing this kind of thing to just kind of mess up the flow of the sprint, I think, yeah, these be, no disrespect, but like these teams that don't have Jasper Philipsen, Tim Merlier, and definitely a pro continental team should definitely do this more.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it was a great move by UnoX to do that, to really try and shake things up. It really works in a technical finale like this, when you've got some roundabouts and street furniture going on. Their positioning was really second to none today. So it was a great move. I'm a little bit confused as to UnoX's sprinting strategy, because at the Tour last year, they went for Christophe at the start, and then they swapped to Barentschold later on in the race. Barentschold sprinted on stage two this week, but then they've swapped over to Christophe. I just can't figure out who they're sprinting for. I almost think that, like you say, Christophe, he's a little bit older. I mean, he had pretty much a box seat today and he didn't win. I'd almost like to see him go for Barentschold a little bit more, but I think that maybe he gets more opportunities in some of the one day classics. And given that he is a lot younger, he will be the sprinter of the future. So maybe they're just trying to hone his skills as a sprinter by learning through Christophe and scenarios like this, and kind of the interesting strategies you can pull maybe when you're not in the best sprinting team or you're up against stronger sprinters. And I think it was a really cool move today, and I really wish that it paid off, because you do see this sometimes from sprinters, and I was just almost shouting at the screen like, Christophe, let the wheel go, let it go, let it go. And he did, and I thought, this is brilliant. It really forces the hand of the other teams who are stronger and have the stronger sprint train. So I think it was a really good move by UnoX. Hopefully we see that a little bit more.
Are you a bit concerned with Jasper Philipsen? Obviously, that bit of a nudge took out his momentum. And then obviously, a guy like him who's won many stages in the Tour is not really interested in sprinting for fourth, but...
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know. He's been very good this week, hasn't he? Of course, there was that crash which he was involved in, where you could argue that he was going to win that, and we don't know if he's perhaps feeling a little bit sore from that afterwards and how he's recovered from that. But yeah, I don't know whether it's Philipsen's been below average this week, but or whether it's just been that Milan's been really above average and he's just kind of outshone him a little bit. I think that he was just beaten by a better man this week. I think it's as simple as that. Obviously, I don't think he's got the strongest lead out train here. I don't think he's got the likes of, you know, Søren Kral or Matthew van der Poel here. And obviously, that's a little bit of a benefit. Whereas I do think the Lidl Trek were perhaps a little bit stronger than their lead out this week. So I think that it was definitely slightly skewed for Milan to do a little bit better this week. But I'm not too concerned about Philipsen. I think that, you know, we've seen him not win every single sprint before last year, and then he went and did really well at the Tour. So at the end of the day, nobody really remembers much about Tirreno if you don't win at the Tour. No offense, Tirreno, but we all know that the Grand Tours are the biggest stages for winning the stages as a sprinter. So I doubt Philipsen will remember too much so long as he gets those Grand Tour wins. Obviously, if he doesn't, then it's going to look doubly bad.
Well, this was last year. Obviously, him and Mathieu Van der Poel were quite dominant where we saw that combination. But yeah, as you said before, Mathieu Van der Poel, he's going to be at the Tour. He's not here. So maybe that was a bit of a disadvantage as well. But nevertheless, in terms of, there was a big player as well. We'll touch on Jonas Vingegaard as well, because he's the second Dane ever to win Tirreno Adriatico, still behind Rolf Sørensen, who's won it twice. Okay, let's go for Jonas Vingegaard. Another impressive win. Dominant. He's been very dominant in these one-week stage races in the last, well, 2 years. Really dominant last year, and now we're just seeing a continuation of that here. And what did you make of his week? He was without rivals, to be honest. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I think he was unbelievably dominant this week. It was only really the TT, which maybe I thought he would finish a few seconds higher, or not a few seconds, and a few places higher. Especially since they had those ridiculous TT helmets on. It's hard to believe that was at the start of this week. It feels like so much has happened. I mean, but at the end of the day, Jonas's performances spoke wonders in the mountains, which is where he is designed to do really well. And it wasn't even really close. The fact that Ayuso took 20 seconds on him in the TT, and then he's ended up finishing a minute and 24 down, is really a testament to just how strong Jonas was. And it wasn't even just Jonas waiting for that stage six, where he knew that he could definitely beat everyone because it's a steeper gradient and a longer climb. But no, he went for it on stage five as well, on a slightly shallower climb too, which I think was really impressive to see. We saw his good descending. I think it just shows that Jonas is a fantastically well-rounded rider. And at the moment, I don't know, I'd say that considering what was going on with Paris-Nice and, you know, how Remco and Roglic were looking, the fact that Poggi is doing the Giro, I'd say that at the moment, it's very early to say this, but he's looking like a Tour de France champion again, considering the, how much time he put into Ayuso. And I think arguably another interesting point is that this clearly shows that Ayuso isn't on that kind of like absolute top tier GC rider just yet. He's definitely still in that tier below, where he's kind of mixing it in with the Hindleys and the Adam Yates's, Simon Yates's, I'd say is kind of where he's at in that second tier. But given that he's so young, he's got the advantage of youth on his side, so it wouldn't surprise me if he joins that top tier in like a few years time. But at the moment, there's still a big divide between pretty much Jonas and like the rest of the field that were here. But we'll have to wait and see what the other kind of top tier guys like your Poggis, Remcos, and maybe Roglic do when they line up against him. I think probably in like Basque country is where we're going to see a lot of overlap next time.
Yeah, we say that, oh yeah, he's only 21, but when Pogacar was 21, he won the Tour de France. So it's a bit, yeah. But the other thing I want to focus on as well, unfortunately, we're both fans of him. Richard Carapaz obviously hasn't had the best time in EF Education Easy Post. That project was going to be so good. One of the best riders in terms of finishing on Grand Tour podiums before he joined EF, and crashing towards the finish. Quite a hard crash as well. Not quite sure how he did it, if he just touched some wheels, but it was only him, and he hit the tarmac quite hard. So at this time, crashing at this period, Tirreno Adriatico, Paris-Nice, is not exactly what you want. This is seen as a tune-up race for the Grand Tours, so yeah, a bit of a worry for EF Education Easy Post for sure.
Yeah, especially considering that he didn't have a great year last year outside of the Italian Classics. That was kind of a slight kind of silver lining to the dark cloud that was his 2023 season. Like I say, it's not ideal, when, especially when you got a lot of the other big GC players seemingly just going through their seasons without woes, without injuries or illnesses. It just means that if he's having to take time off, it's weeks off the bike, or, you know, even if it's just like 2 weeks, it can make all the difference when it comes to the Tour de France. I mean, Poggi's crash at Liège was, you know, speaks, you know, testament to that, how when you get that time off the bike, it really does hinder your performance. Obviously, it is March and the Tour's in June, and that's the big goal for Carapaz and EF, is to get a good result there. But he's got Basque Country still to come. Whether he'll be all right for that, that is still about 3 weeks away. He's got a bit of the Ardennes in there, then Romandy, Tour de Suisse, and then the Tour de France. So I think there's still a lot of time for Carapaz to bounce back, and hopefully this injury isn't so bad that it really hinders his Tour de France prep, because he's a big contender if he's in good form to, you know, maybe contest the top five.
Yeah, I agree with that. But anyways, that's basically it for Tirreno Adriatico coverage, recap race analysis. Make sure to hit the like button, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, and check out Patrick's own channel, Audio Cycling. And if you want to see more of Patrick, the Echelon Cycling Podcast, we've got a new episode out tomorrow where we'll discuss all this and Paris-Nice and Milan-San Remo. It's a busy time in the World Tour calendar, but it's a good period right now. But with that, thank you for watching, and we will see you again.